This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. America recently lost two of its greatest black pioneers, Nichelle Nichols and Bill Russell.
What a block by Russell! What a block by Bill Russell on Chamberlain's dunk shot! Incredible!
Bill Russell was the greatest winner in U.S. sports history. He won 11 NBA championships during his storied 13-year career with the Boston Celtics. Five-time MVP who transformed the way defense was played, Russell also broke racial barriers, becoming the first black coach in a major American sports league in 1967. But it was off the floor where Russell left his greatest legacy. An outspoken civil rights activist during his playing career and throughout his life, until his death on July 31st at the age of 88. Nichelle Nichols broke barriers in that other great American cultural force, television. As Lieutenant Uhura in the original Star Trek series in the 1960s, Nichols played a major role in what would become an iconic show at a time when black women were almost never offered prominent billing on series television.
Progress report.
I'm connecting the bypass circuit now, sir. It should take another half hour.
Speed is essential, Lieutenant.
Mr. Spock, I haven't done anything like this in years. If it isn't done just right, I could blow the entire communication system. It's very delicate work, sir.
I can think of no one better equipped to handle it, Miss Uhura. Please proceed.
Nichelle Nichols died one day before Bill Russell. She died on July 30th at the age of 89. So today, we will remember their legacies and why it was so critical that Nichols and Russell both used their cultural and sports platforms to advance the cause of civil rights in this country. And joining us now is Angelique Fossette. She is CEO of Archangel Films LA, a producer and elder abuse activist. She was a close friend of Nichelle Nichols. Angelique, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
And I know that you and Nichelle had a very close relationship, so I am particularly sorry for your loss and grateful that you're willing to share your memories of her with us today. We're also joined by Mark Spears. He's a senior NBA writer for ESPN and the sports and culture website Anscape as well. Mark, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
Angelique, let me just start by asking, what did it mean to you, or how are you thinking through the fact that both Bill Russell and Nichelle Nichols passed away within a day of each other? What does that loss mean for the country?
Well, spiritually speaking, you know, obviously Nichelle was like a second mother to me and gave me away in marriage. So the relationship is different. I never met Mr. Russell, and, you know, my condolences as well. But spiritually speaking, you know, when two people pass together, you know, you would hope that at some point they would meet and have the same impact again on whatever plane. But I think that when our cultural icons and people we love pass away, it affects the entire nation in a profound way. Not only is there sadness and pain, but we do get to have a nudge as to what they did for civil rights, human rights, how they paved their pathway. And I think that although I'm personally sad and my husband is personally sad, and so is the nation, I think people remember when, you know, any American, but when it comes to Black Americans specifically, that they did something that was so profound that they actually helped other people. They were selfless in the ways in which they helped. And it gives everyone a nudge that they should do the same.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mark, same question to you. And I have to give a hat tip, by the way, to Eugene Robinson, who a couple of days ago in the Washington Post, in his column, he wrote that Nichelle Nichols and Bill Russell dying within a day of each other was particularly poignant because he called them indomitable members of the generation of Black pioneers who changed the cultural landscape of the nation. Talk about that.
Well, it also changed a generation in seeing somebody do things that can inspire you for greater. You know, what Miss Nichols, seeing it was not just seeing a Black woman on television, it was also seeing a Black woman in the, you know, the NASA space, mm-hmm. the space. And like, at that time, like, there were Black people, Black women, probably women of color in that industry that probably never thought such was possible unless they saw her, you know? So I think that's an impact that she had that perhaps Bill Russell couldn't have, because, I mean, there's been countless Black men who have played the sport of basketball. But for Mrs. Nichols, she was going into a space where, you know, a racist part or people that just weren't educated or just didn't believe, didn't think such was even possible for a Black person, for a person of color, for a Black woman, you know. But with Mr. Russell, he was a civil rights activist. He was an Oakland man who, you know, had roots to the South and felt probably, I think, from being from those parts, confident that he should speak his mind and be proud as a Black man to speak out. And, you know, was perhaps, I won't call him the first, because, you know, Ali was there certainly and Jim Brown, but one of the first Black athletes who used their platform to help their people.
Yeah. So do you think that their impact is adequately recognized? I mean, of course, in the days following any prominent American's passing, there's a lot of writing and observance, such as we're doing now. But in terms of how much their efforts, both, you know, on the screen, on the court, and in the public eye, how much their efforts actually made an impact in the United States in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and beyond. Do you think we really understand that? And Angelique, let me turn that to you.
Well, you know, as far as understanding it, I think now the impact of, say, Nichelle Nichols and Bill Russell, let's just, you know, get to the talk of it, to the core of it. You know, these were American icons. These were people who accomplished great things. And sometimes in life, you can accomplish great things in whatever field you're in, right? Especially if it's entertainment or if it's in front of the public eye. And people, just as being human beings, they may look away from the person just a little bit, or they might, you know, stay with the person. But, you know, people go through their life experiences, fortunately and unfortunately, when one passes, there's a lot more emphasis on the person's life and what they did and what their accomplishments were. In regards to Nichelle Nichols, you know, she had millions of Star Trek fans, as well as millions of African-American women who highly respected her. A lot of women who were not African-American, who were of other nationalities, who respected her. Why? Because she had the first position of power in TV. Mm-hmm. The first woman, period. So, you know, I think everyone always thought about that, you know, that she made such an impact, and that type of impact gets into our psychosis. It gets into our biology of what we think about, or not our psychosis, our psyche. It gets mm-hmm. into who we are, and we remember that. So I think that everyone that thought about Nichelle Nichols thought good things, and it was deserved, because Nichelle was not, you know, if we're being real, you know, there's many, you know, celebrity style or celebrity type people who can be very conceited and maybe not remember where their bread is buttered. Nichelle remembered, and she stopped for every fan. She signed every autograph. She loved Star Trek. She knew where she came from, and she kept that. And in death, people will remember and they'll continue to remember. And, you know, in my life, I will make sure that people continue to remember as well. Mm-hmm. And Mark, about her life.
Yeah. So Mark, would love to hear you about that too, because it's hard to encapsulate the impact that both of these people had on the country. So do we fully, you know, understand the legacy that someone like Bill Russell's left behind?
Yeah, on a different note, it's kind of funny. Unlike Mrs. Nichols, Mr. Russell didn't like signing autographs. And, you know, there was certainly you could say a grumpy side to him where, you know, he just didn't like signing autographs, would rather have a conversation with you than sign an autograph, didn't really see the value in him. One of my friends, Rashe Holman, told a story about how he saw him in a restaurant in Oakland called Pecan, since been closed, soul food restaurant. And he walked up to him and he said, Mr. Russell, man, it's a pleasure to meet you. He said, well, we haven't met. And he's like, what's your name? He's like, it's Rashe Holman. He's like, I'm Bill Russell. Now we've met. And he walked out the door and left. So that's like classic Bill Russell. But, you know, I to answer your question, I give the NBA credit because he was basically the patriarch of the NBA. He was the father of the NBA. Anytime there was a celebration, whether it was like NBA All-Star Weekend or the Hall of Fame, when Russell got onto good graces again with the Hall of Fame, where the Hall of Fame got into good graces with him, he was always the center of attention. I don't care if Michael Jordan was there, Magic Johnson, or Larry Bird. He was always the center of attention. So he was certainly more than respected his entire post-career.
Well, Mark J. Spears and Angelique Fossette, stand by for just a moment. So much more to talk about regarding Nichelle Nichols, Bill Russell, and the impact they had on this country. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we are talking about the lives and legacies of two of America's greatest Black pioneers, Nichelle Nichols, who of course starred as Lieutenant Uhura on Star Trek, and NBA great Bill Russell. They both died at the end of last month at the ages of 88 and 89. I'm joined today by Mark J. Spears. He's a senior NBA writer for ESPN and Andscape. He's also host of the Beyond 28 podcast. And Angelique Fossette joins us as well. She's a close friend of Nichelle Nichols and CEO of Archangel Films LA. I want to play a moment from a 2011 interview from NPR's Tell Me More, and Nichelle Nichols was interviewed on that particular episode, and she tells a fantastic story about meeting Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
One of the promoters came over to me and said, Miss Nichols, there's someone who would like to meet you. He says he is your greatest fan. And I'm thinking, a trekker, you know, and I turn, and before I could get up, I looked across the way, and there was the face of Dr. Martin Luther King smiling at me and walking toward me. And he started laughing. By the time he reached me, he said, yes, Miss Nichols, I am your greatest fan. I am that Trekkie.
I've heard that clip many times, and it astounds me every single time. Now, Nichelle Nichols went on to say that she had expressed her deep desire to be marching alongside Dr. King. She told Dr. King that in this encounter. But he told her she was already in the right place.
No, you don't understand. We don't need you on the to march. You are marching. You are reflecting what we are fighting for. So I said to him, thank you so much, and I'm going to miss my co-stars. And his face got very, very serious, and he said, what are you talking about? And I said, well, I told Gene just yesterday that I'm going to leave the show after the first year because I've been offered, and he stopped me and said, you cannot do that. And I was stunned. He said, don't you understand what this man has achieved? For the first time, we are being seen the world over as we should be seen.
That's Nichelle Nichols from a 2011 interview on NPR's Tell Me More. And just to be clear, when she says, he said, you cannot do that, that was Dr. King who exhorted or implored Nichelle Nichols not to step away from Star Trek. And of course, she's referring to Gene there being Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry. Angelique Fossette, what did Nichelle Nichols how did she talk to you about what she thought of her role on Star Trek, especially her memories of that time? Did she see it from the start as both, you know, a fantastic job and this, you know, important sort of civil rights demonstration through the medium of television? Did she see it as that from the beginning?
Well, she loved Star Trek, and the job was a job for her, but it was a good job. When she met Martin Luther King Jr., that's when things really changed, because, as mentioned, she was going to leave the show, and she wanted to go on with her life and do other things. You know, like a lot of actors don't want to get, you know, stuck in one role and that's it. But when Martin Luther King spoke to her, that changed things. And I think that she really understood what and who she was at an even higher level at that time. I think I actually took her to that NPR interview. Actually, I don't know if it was in 2011, but I think that's an interview that I had taken her to. And at that interview, they had given her some old tapes of Martin Luther King that they had found. And so she was really, really moved. It was a really special time for her to get that. But her job meant, her job was really her life. Like I said, she knew where her bread was buttered. And, you know, you never know what you're meant to do necessarily until you're there and then you really see it and you're in it. And then someone like Martin Luther King, you know, speaks to you and tells you, you know, gives you that nudge that, look, you know, you're affecting the entire planet. Yeah. So, you know, she loved her job. She loved Star Trek like no other.
And just to be clear, the interview was aired first on January 17th of 2011. So it may have been recorded before that.
Yes, there's a second one after that.
You're right. So I the reason why I asked you about that is because, I mean, did she feel maybe after that encounter with Dr. King, did it sort of change her view of what she could do with the attention and platform that the role had given her?
Yes. Yes. She knew the profundity of her role. Yes. Mm-hmm. And once you know, I mean, as you know, I'm a human and civil rights activist as well.
Yes.
Given the end of her life and the situation that she went through. And it's because of her that, you know, I've become, you know, a nationwide elder abuse activist. So, you know, it is not until you get into it, in it, that you know. And I believe, you know, that's what really happened with her. And every step she took, metaphorically and physically, she knew who she was. She knew what her impact would be. You know, when she recruited the first African-American woman into the NASA space program, that was profound. When she recruited the first female into the same NASA space program and the first African American male, those actions, she knew who she was, yeah. And she knew what she was doing. And it's not like you see yourself as, oh, this huge thing. You just know that you have a purpose and you're called to it. And she took that calling, mm-hmm. and she did exactly what she was meant to do in life.
Yeah. You know, I can't blame her after the first season of Star Trek for thinking about stepping away from the show, because no one thought it was really going to go anywhere at the time. And, you know, I suppose one can, yes, only handle so much of watching William Shatner just kind of like flop around on a TV set all day long. But you know, that's why I think that story that she related is so important, because I think Dr. King had also told her that because of her presence on the, you know, the deck of the Enterprise, it was one of the few shows that his children were allowed to watch. Do I remember that correctly?
Yes.
Yeah.
I know that for a fact from speaking with that family. So, yes.
Amazing. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And so the importance of her and the dignity and strength with which she played that character is just so profoundly important. Around the planet, yes, and, as you're saying. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. And why wouldn't you? You know, it's, you know, as Black women, you know, we're sometimes on television portrayed as angry Black women, mm-hmm. upset Black women, you know, we're out of control, all of that. And some of those are characters. And I give it to those women because out of the outside, they're playing a character. They're working. They're getting their job done. But that's a portrayal that I think a lot of America sees and thinks. But that's not reality. You know, as a Black woman myself and a CEO myself, I know we all work hard. Now, Nichelle's impact, because of her role, she wasn't portraying any of that. Not that she didn't in other roles, but her main role, Star Trek, she played a powerful, passionate, beautiful woman, you know, who controlled things. She handled things. And I can't tell you the impact, you know, from all the people that we would meet, whether, you know, they're people she knew and reacquainted with or people in the street that she would meet. And it was always, Miss Nichols, you made such an impact on my life because of you. I'm now a scientist, mm-hmm. you know, I now work in IT. I just, you know, there's so many people who were impacted by a Black woman who had the perfect role and knew, yeah, how to handle it and took it even farther.
Right. Well, Mark J. Spears, I haven't forgotten that you're there, and I appreciate you listening so carefully along with me.
Oh, no, shoot, I'm getting educated. I'm all right. Y'all can keep talking.
Well, we have some tape here from Bill Russell as well, talking about Dr. King. And this is from 2013, the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. And Bill Russell spoke to a crowd gathered at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington.
50 years ago, the night before the march, I met Dr. King. And he invited me to be up here, and I respectfully declined because the organizers had worked for years to get this together, and I hadn't done anything.
Now, when Bill Russell says up here, he means on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial for the original March on Washington. He did attend. Marched beside Dr. King, was in the first row, I believe. And he said also that leading up to the 50th anniversary of the march, Russell had heard a lot about how far the United States has come. But he added that what's important is to focus on what is still left to be done.
I'm here to join you and to implore you. The fight has just begun. And we can never accept the status quo until the word progress is taken out of our vocabulary.
Now, Mark, Bill Russell's passionate and outspoken advocacy for the rights of Black Americans can take up multiple hours, and I hate trying to encapsulate it, but can you tell me, you know, a little bit about, did he, it feels like he never even thought twice about using his platform as a major NBA player to talk about civil rights because he had to, right? He was facing racism constantly in the NBA.
And you got to remember, like, he was the NBA's first big star that was Black. The NBA is, at that time certainly isn't what it is today. But he was the first star. There were those that came before him. Nat Clifton, Chuck Cooper, Earl Lloyd. They were the first three that came into the NBA in 1950. But Bill Russell was the first star, probably the first megastar of the NBA. And, you know, in 1961, he started a boycott of a restaurant. The Celtics were on the road in Lexington, Kentucky, and they wouldn't let the Black players in, and he started a protest there. So, I mean, this is, at that time, somebody was just out of the University of San Francisco doing this in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Like, like, can you imagine that scene, 1961, him and his Black teammates and his white teammates, like Hall of Famer Bob Cousy, doing that. But the thing that that I still remember, because, like, we've seen the picture of him next to Ali with Jim Brown and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and other stars and supporting Ali when he didn't want to go to Vietnam. But what also sticks out to me was, you know, him putting on Twitter, and believe it or not, even at 88, Bill Russell loved Twitter. He tweeted a lot. And I used to wonder, I'm like, man, somebody doing that for him. But Dr. Harry Edwards, the great Dr. Harry Edwards, told me that they used to communicate on Twitter. I was like, oh, he really did do that. But he tweeted out a photo kneeling in support with Colin Kaepernick several years ago, which was like, wow. Okay, like, so even at an older age, when his body was failing him, his hearing was failing him, he used Twitter to still get his message out. And it was interesting, like, he went to the Naismith Smith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame, I believe, in 1976, and he refused to get inducted, didn't go to the ceremony.
Right.
Because he just felt like they didn't do enough to put Blacks in there, especially Black pioneers like the Chuck Cooper and Nat Clifton and Earl Lloyd, who I mentioned earlier, into the Hall of Fame. And so, interestingly, last year, he was put into the Hall of Fame for a second time as a coach. And he was the first Black coach in NBA history, and I believe pro sports history. So that, I mean, like, it's hard to think about it at that time, but can you imagine, was it 1967, I believe, like, the Celtics got a Black coach. Like, but it took a Bill Russell to get that kind of respect where, you know, maybe you thought it but didn't say it, right?
Yeah.
Because it's Bill Russell. You respected it because it was Bill Russell. But one of the guys that runs the Hall of Fame told me the other day, after Mr. Russell's passing, he said that it took them a while to get Bill Russell on the same page with the Hall of Fame. And they had to, you know, show him that they were willing to bring Black pioneers in order to do it. So when Chuck Cooper, who was the first Black player who since passed, posthumously added to the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame in 2019, that was something that mended a lot of bridges with Bill Russell. And they put him in last year as a coach. So he has the honor of being put into the Hall of Fame twice. And I am kind of started feeling like perhaps health-wise things weren't that great when he had a very limited role in the whole All-Star weekend. I mean, Hall of Fame weekend last year. And I hosted the press conference, and he opted not to attend that. The one thing he did do is he told the Hall of Fame, like, y'all ain't done. There's more Black pioneers to put in. And this was last year. So his, you know, civil rights advocacy, his fights for Black people. He also, at the Hall of Fame last year wore a t-shirt, Stop Asian Hate. So it wasn't just about Black people too. And this was last year. This was lifetime work for him, not just when he was playing.
Yeah. Well, today we are remembering two of America's greatest Black pioneers, NBA great Bill Russell and Nichelle Nichols, who broke barriers as Lieutenant Uhura on Star Trek. They both died at the end of July at the ages of 88 and 89. Mark J. Spears joins us, and Angelique Fassette joins us as well to remember Nichols and Russell. And if you've got a memory or a story about the impact these two people had on your life, hop over on social media or Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We'll be back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Seen. Listen and follow Last Seen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Just a little preview of what we're working on for tomorrow. We're going to be talking about the federal government's $7.5 billion plan to build a nationwide network of electric vehicle charging stations. The hope is to fight, you know, that range anxiety that EV owners might have about taking their cars long distance. So we want to hear from you. Not yet bought an electric vehicle, even though maybe you're thinking about it because you're concerned about not having a place to charge it. And if you do own an EV, what do you think would be the best sort of layout for a nationwide charging network? Is that the way to focus it, or should there be more emphasis on, say, more urban charging stations? We want to hear your stories at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. Today, we are talking about the legacy and influence of two great Black Americans who have recently passed away, Bill Russell and Nichelle Nichols. I'm joined today by Mark J. Spears. He's senior NBA writer for ESPN and the sports and culture website Andscape. He's also host of the Beyond 28 podcast. Angelique Fassette joins us as well. She's a very close friend of Nichelle Nichols, CEO of Archangel Films LA. She's also a producer and an activist against elder abuse. Now, I just wanted to play a little bit more of tape from Bill Russell, because, Mark, you had mentioned a couple of key things about Russell's civil rights activism. And I don't even really want to call it activism, because it simply was who he was and how he viewed the world based on his experiences growing up as a Black man in America. And you had mentioned what happened in the early 60s in Kentucky. Now, specifically, it was, 1961, when five Black players on the Celtics and two more from the St. Louis Hawks boycotted an exhibition game in Lexington, Kentucky because, quite frankly, of the extreme racial discrimination they faced. So here is how Bill Russell recalled the incident.
Casey was my roommate. He went to go down and get a pregame meal at the hotel, and they wouldn't serve him. So Casey comes back and tells me that, because I was getting ready to go meet him, he says, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going." He says, "They don't want to serve you down there." So I said, "Well, Casey, that's the best thing you said to me in a long time." And he says, "What do you mean?" I said, "I'm going to go home." I went in the room, and I called Eastern Airlines, and I said, "When's your next flight out of here?" They said, "Where do you want to go?" I said, "Boston's my first destination, then New York and Washington. And if you don't have anything going in those three places, then Chicago. But I want to get out of here."
Mark, let me just ask you quickly. You know, Russell was taking a huge risk at the time, right? I mean, there was no guarantee that doing something that public wouldn't have an impact on his NBA career, right?
Well, he was the reason why they won championships, 11 of them.
Yeah.
So there's strength in success, right? So, you know, Chuck Cooper, who was the first Boston Celtic, who was the first Black player drafted, he didn't have that power. He wasn't a star on the team. They kind of used him in a way where you had to play your role and not overstate your role, because the white players were supposed to be stars. I've been told by several Black pioneers that the NBA at that time had a quota. So there were numerous Black players who were super talented, but in the NBA at that time, which probably had about 8 to 10 teams, they would only keep like 3 Black players. So Hugh Evans, who was recently passed, a legendary Hall of Fame referee, he told me, yeah, I didn't go out for the St. Louis Hawks because I looked at the roster and there was like 3 Black guys on the team. So I figured my chances of making it weren't good, right? Mm-hmm. Well, the Celtics weren't like that. Bill Russell was a star. They were winning. They couldn't afford to lose him, because if they lost him, they lost. And so having that success allowed him to have the platform, because if Bill Russell was Bill Robinson and he wasn't playing, then they would have told him to go home. Mm. So his success and his voice allowed him to have the power and the platform to trumpet how he felt. And he also had a coach in Red Auerbach and an owner in Walter Brown, who, when he selected Chuck Cooper as the first Black player selected in the NBA, said, I don't care if he's polka dot, we select Chuck Cooper. Mm-hmm. He was at the right franchise to do that. I don't know if he was playing for anyone else that he would be able to do that. So as much as Boston, deservedly so, gets beat up for its, racism and racist past, I mean, we also have to give the Celtics franchise in Boston respect for being the first franchise to draft a Black player, to have the first Black star, the first Black coach, the first Black starting five. And I believe the Celtics have had more Black head coaches and currently have one, Ime Udoka, than any team in NBA history has ever had. Mm-hmm. They've had, I believe, Russell, Doc Rivers, Casey Jones, Ime Udoka, all of them have coached in the NBA Finals, which, you know, we talked about somebody being visible. Seeing a Black head coach in the NBA Finals is certainly something that is inspirational to a lot of people of color.
Yeah.
So I think the Celtics franchise too, and Bill Russell's success, afforded him the ability to make those kind of stands.
Well, I mean, as you know, I'm sitting here in Boston and thinking to myself, if only the city had followed the example of the Celtics franchise, right? Because, again, we could talk for quite a bit about the kind of racism that Russell faced in Boston.
Yeah, it was laughable to me that the Celtics of the 80s were hated by a lot of Black people outside of Boston because they were seen as this white team. Because Larry Bird and Boston, I'm like, the Celtics have done more for Black people than any franchise in sports. Yeah. Like, how can you hate the Celtics? Right.
Well, there's one more clip from Bill Russell that I want to play here. And actually, I'm going to use that as a question to ask to you, Angelique. But hang on here for a second, because Mark had mentioned that Bill Russell also, in addition to his commanding presence as an NBA player, also went on to become the first Black coach in major U.S. sports. And so here's a moment from an interview in the 1970s when Russell talks about the kind of scrutiny he faced when he coached the Celtics and other teams. And it's just really biting, because even though Russell had won 11 NBA championships as a player, he talks about how he was frequently asked if he was qualified to coach.
because I knew it was strictly a racial thing, because they hire coaches every day that have, no one says publicly anyway, is he qualified? Or that much discussion about what kind of coach you make.
If you feel that it was on more or less racial tones, did you also feel that perhaps they felt that being a black coach that you would be more sensitive to the black players?
I don't know. They asked me questions like, could I coach without being prejudiced toward the white players? In all the years I've been playing, no one ever asked the coaches that I played for if they could coach without being prejudiced to black players. In fact, it never even come up. And this is, we'll find out in the colleges all over the country that this is the case in a lot of cases, that coaches are prejudiced against the black players. But when I took the job, this is the first time I think it was raised where the coach could coach objectively. But really, since I'm such an egotist, that's what I call it, it didn't bother me because I didn't care what they thought, really. And those questions, I just said, well, okay, you ask your questions, I'm not going to worry about it. You ask your questions, you get a silly question, silly answer, and we get that over with, and I go about doing what I want to do.
It's Bill Russell from the mid-1970s there. Now, Angelique, one of the things that I hear Bill Russell talking about in that clip is, even though, you know, a giant like him in his field, you know, had proven beyond any doubt of his success and capabilities at the time when he went on to a managerial leadership position in the NBA, his qualifications were questioned. And so it's sort of this reflection on how far the industry he was in had moved, despite the leadership of people like Bill Russell. I'm wondering if you ever had conversations with Nichelle Nichols about something similar in Hollywood, because representation in Hollywood has been such a long-standing issue, even all the way through to today. Did she ever talk to you about that?
Well, yes, we talked about things like that. And I appreciate your question, and I'm loving the conversation you're having with Mark. Mark, if I may, because I grew up with, you know, Kareem in my grandmother's house, and Jim Brown. And Jim Brown dated my aunt Brenda Sykes, who was also an actress, and Gil Scott-Heron, which I'm sure Mr. Spears might know. And, you know, all of these people, you know, I was born in 1970, you know, but I was very self-aware because I had civil rights type of people in my life. And, you know, with Nichelle, you know, I remember her asking me when we first met, so what family are you from? You know, because LA was such a small, even though it looks big, it was a small community back in the 50s, 60s. Everyone knew each other. Everyone knew each family. And when it came to representation in the industry in the 70s, you know, these strong black actresses, you know, they had to be in, they had to take roles in blaxploitation movies. Mm-hmm. Now, I honor blaxploitation movies because it gave black people an opportunity to do what they loved. But it was very challenging, you know, to get a job outside of blaxploitation movies. Occasionally you would, but people of color weren't represented. They weren't. And, you know, yes, of course, we spoke about things like that because I'm a filmmaker and actress myself. So we spoke about those things. But, you know, eventually the industry changed. Right about the late 90s, you know, things started changing. I was loving the fact, you know, when Nichelle started getting other jobs besides, you know, just the blaxploitation movies and et cetera. But she also was in the actual Star Trek movie. So she got that work as well. But yes, we talked about that. It's kind of common if you're black to talk about those things. And I wasn't around when she was in those movies, but those are just things that we talked about. Mm-hmm. So again, that's pretty common when you're black. You talk about, okay, well, how many opportunities were there? How many opportunities are there? Is Hollywood representing the woman of color or man of color properly? And, you know, just now recently, you know, what Nichelle did, she is a pioneer for so many actors and actresses who have roles right now in front of the camera and behind the camera. It's really her. And mm-hmm. I'm so I'm so happy for her soul for that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we sort of round into the last portion of this conversation, I wonder, Mark, how would you describe what work needs to be done to carry on the legacy of Bill Russell? Because as you were saying before, I mean, clearly through, at the very, very least, his Twitter feed, he made it clear that he didn't think the work for, you know, racial equality and justice in this country was over, not even in sports, right? So what do you think Bill Russell would want in terms of his legacy to continue?
Well, he mentioned that the fight isn't over. And I do think that there has been a lot of progress made, but there's much more to be made. You know, we saw Miss Nichols on screen and you know, we saw, but how many people are behind the scenes directing her? Mm-hmm. How many people are to then or now? How many people of color are different sexual genders are making a selection of who's going to be on these shows? I'm also a longtime member of the National Association of Black Journalists and somebody who has written a lot about, you know, Black executives in the NBA or lack thereof. And so we got the acting role down. We got the dunking role down, but we need the coaching role down. We need the president role down. We need the general manager role down. We need the ownership role down. And you know, such also needs to be the case in Hollywood in terms of the people behind the camera, the people making the decisions, the people who own the studios, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think why he was pushing, also continuing to push the Hall of Fame, is there just needs to be more representation all around. And yeah, we've gotten those roles in the public, but we need the roles behind the scenes as well.
Well, Angelique, as we wrap up here, you get the last word today.
Oh, well, I'm just grateful that you and your organization cares about Nichelle Nichols and Mr. Russell. You know, their lives will never be outshined. You know, the work that they did were truly pioneers. They found their trail and they blazed it, and they blazed it hard. And I hope in the future that people continue to blaze their trails as hard as they did. We were all blessed to have people like this on earth and to be an example for all of us. So I'm just grateful that you're caring enough to care about these two individuals.
Well, I think the gratitude is ours to both of you, and most especially to Nichelle Nichols and Bill Russell for being the kind of Americans that we all aspire to be, really making a difference, using their platforms, even at great risk of themselves sometimes, to advance a vision of America that we're still all working towards. So, Angelique Fossette, CEO of Archangel Films LA, a producer and an elder abuse activist as well. Thank you so much for joining us, Angelique.
Thank you so much for your time. Grateful.
And Mark J. Spears, senior NBA writer for ESPN and Anscape and host of the Beyond 28 podcast. Mark, thank you so much.
Oh, loved it. Have me back. I enjoyed this conversation.
We will. This is On Point.